Hi everyone, it's Lydia here. Welcome back to the Weird Years podcast, where we get into the messy, confusing, the meltdown-inducing questions that hit in your 30s. Today we're talking about the often glamorized journey of being an entrepreneur, the smashing the glass ceiling, being your own boss, chasing your passion and your purpose. But is it really as glamorous as we read in newspapers, magazines, or see on TV? Or have we been sold this idea that success equals happiness and freedom? And actually, that's not the case. Actually, it can come with some pretty hefty side effects. Today's guest is Chloe Downs, and she knows the story firsthand. Chloe built a multi-million pound influencer agency before she was 30. This was a company that championed inclusion, a company that got her on the Forbes 30 under 30 list, and is where she was able to redefine what good leadership really looks like. But at the height of the business's success, she realized something that a lot of people would be scared to admit. This business that she built, it wasn't her dream at all. It actually wasn't her passion and it didn't light her up anymore. In this chat, we talk about the pressure of being a woman in business, the pressure of being a founder, and especially of being a female founder of color in business. And the pressure to be visible and perfect and to be constantly representing everyone. When she started to be recognized for her business achievements, but outside of work, when she was out with friends, when she was just living her life, it wasn't making her feel comfortable. And it got to the point where she just said enough is enough. This, coupled with the realization that actually this wasn't her passion, is when she walked away. And that is the crux of this chat. What is it like to walk away from something that is successful, to walk away whilst you're winning? I really loved this chat, and I love Chloe's no bullshit approach to business and life and identity. It's really refreshing, to be honest, to have such a straight conversation. She also opens up on what it's like to live with both ADHD and autism, which as a combination I found really fascinating in how it shapes her approach to business, but also just the way that she sees the world. If you're sat at your desk surrounded by accolades and notions of success, but you've still got this quiet voice in your head that says, this isn't it, then this episode is for you. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Chloe, welcome to The Weird Years.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here.
That's good. That's
everything's
good.
Weird, so you know, let's...
Yeah, everything is fucking weird. That's so true. We're going to get into all things business and identity, and also, like, I think quite a lot of this is going to go down being a female founder and probably what that looks like and things.
Yeah.
For anyone who's never come across you before, what should they know about you? Who are you? What do they need to know?
So, my name is Chloe Downs. I am the exited founder of Shift, which was an influencer talent management agency, an award-winning, actually, multi-award-winning influencer talent management agency. We managed a range of influencers from fashion to books to all different stuff, family. But yeah, I was running that for 4 years and I exited in April. Mm-hmm. I'm actually launching a new business next week. So we could probably talk about that because I assume...
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Oh, it will be announced by the time this comes out, I assume. So yeah, that's something else is coming soon.
Okay. And that's what I really wanted to get into is, like, I think the idea of leaving a business... And your business was, like, doing really well.
Very well,
point.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It continues to do well. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But you chose to leave, like, at a point of it performing really, really well, mm-hmm. which is not often what you hear.
No. Yeah. It's I've been speaking a lot to people about leaving when things are doing well in comparison to leaving when things are doing badly, and like what's easier and what the difficulties are of both. And stepping away when things are actually going well is quite scary because you know it's gonna, like, it's always weighing up the options of what would happen if I stayed, what would happen if I go.
Yeah,
I would continue probably being successful if I stayed, but would I be happy? And it's, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in my... Yeah, a lot of stuff went on in my head when I was making that decision, for sure.
Even with that word of successful, I want to go all the way back to when you started the business. Mm-hmm. Like, what got you to being like, okay, I'm actually going to found this thing, go out on my own?
So I'd been working in the, like, talent management industry for 2 years. Yeah, 2 years before I started my agency. So I worked for two different agencies. Starting right at the bottom, I didn't actually follow any influence at the time. I had to blag my way into this job. At the time, I was one of those people that always checked who wasn't following, you know, those apps that told you who wasn't following you back.
Are they legit, though?
I have no idea.
Okay.
At the time.
If they are, I want to get one. And anyone who unfollows the podcast, I'll come to your house.
She's ready. But yeah, so I was one of those people, and the only people I followed that didn't follow me back was Rihanna and Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who I actually don't follow anymore. But those were the only people, because I only really followed my friends. I didn't follow influencers. I just didn't really care.
Right.
I've never really been into celebrities, minus Rihanna.
And The Rock Johnson.
Well, yeah, at the time. But now I don't care about him anymore either. So, you know, it's just Rihanna until I die. But yeah, so I saw this job posting. I was working in events before. I saw this job posting, thought it sounded all right. Didn't really want to work in that industry, but I was like, I need a job. So I'll apply it, it seems fine. As I say, blagged it, because it wasn't something that I really knew that much about. And then started and then worked my way up very quickly, and then got poached by another agency, and then basically helped them to start up their talent management arm, because they were just a marketing agency at the time. Mm. So was doing that, for, as I say, for 2 years. The point in which I said, yeah, I can do this myself, was, to be completely honest, my boss at my second agency, I knew more than her. She was constantly asking me to help her with stuff or what to do or whatever. Yeah. And I thought, if you're above me and you're definitely getting paid considerably more than me, I'm sure, why can't I just do this? Like, if you're asking me everything, so I must be able to do this myself. So yeah, that's the one thing I can thank her for, that she helped me to realize that I was good at my job. So yeah, that was kind of the point. And then there was other things where, you know, I didn't agree with how certain agencies was being run and how people were approaching talent management. And I wanted to approach it in a way that I felt was right. Mm. So those were kind of the triggering points of me thinking, yeah, I'll do it by myself.
How old are you at this point?
I was 26. This was in lockdown as well. It was lockdown at
really?
The time. Yeah.
Okay, so everybody else is like having a life spiral in lockdown, yeah. I feel.
Furlough, going on walks.
Yeah.
That's what my friends do.
Exactly, like furlough, going on walks, and also just being like, please don't make me go back to that fucking job that I hate. Yeah. How do you even, like, where's the ambition come from? Like, are you a naturally, like, super ambitious person, ambitious family? Like, where do you get the confidence to be like, okay, I'm going to do it?
It's really weird. I think everyone would describe me as an ambitious person, but reflecting on what I know about myself, I don't know if I am. I think not ambitious in the kind of the standard way, I suppose, of like, oh, I want to be successful, I want to be rich, and I want to have all these things. I don't think it's ever been that. I think I have always strived to be as comfortable and happy as possible. And I know I would be more comfortable and happy if I worked for myself than working for someone else. Mm. I also really like efficiency. And sometimes working for other people is actually not the most efficient way of working, because other people aren't that efficient.
Yeah.
And I know, especially with talent management, there's so many blockers of like getting things done, because you're constantly having to wait for other people to do things. So if I can remove as many of those blockers as possible, then I can do things better, in my opinion at the time. I think in terms of doing my own thing, it come from a mix of things. As I said, I think there was the kind of passion of, I want to create this agency that's doing things better. I also wanted to create an agency that people were happy to work for. I've had 10 million jobs, and I'd never really been like truly happy in any job. And I also think that like there were so many jobs where my bosses didn't really care about their staff. They cared about making money or whatever it is. So I wanted to create a space where people actually enjoyed coming to work.
Yeah.
That was quite a big motivator, again, probably just because I hadn't had it. And also I wanted that for myself. I wanted to create an environment that I was happy to be in. But I also think it was the motivation of, I just want to work for myself.
Yeah, that's basically so fair. I mean, that first part sounded so rational of like, I can do it more efficient, because you're saying, you know, I thought I'd be happier. I think even that, like a lot of the time when people start businesses, it's coming from like a financial point of view. Yeah. It's often like money and power.
Yeah.
It's like, I can have a bit more of an ego boost for this. I can make more money for this. Yeah. But that wasn't for you.
No, throughout my life, I've never really been someone who's like, I wasn't that kid that was like, oh, I'm going to be rich and famous. I was never that child. I think it was probably partly due to my upbringing, where like my parents never really had that mentality generally, that it wasn't a thing where it was like, oh yeah, you need to make loads of money or anything like that. I also think I come from a working class background, but in comparison to a lot of my friends that I grew up around, I never really needed for anything. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of friends who literally needed food or needed like more rooms because they were sharing rooms with like multiple siblings and things like that. I didn't have everything, but I think I was a lot more comfortable than most of my friends that I was around.
Yeah.
So I think I can see that difference in a lot of my friends that I grew up with, that maybe weren't as much of a privileged position as me, that I think because I never felt like I was missing anything, I don't feel like I'm striving to like fill holes that I didn't have, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what it is anyway. So I think a lot of that kind of upbringing of not needing for anything has probably made me more likely to not care as much about, obviously I need money to live, but yeah, because my brother's exactly the same. My brother does not care at all about making money. So yeah, probably a lot of upbringing stuff, I think.
I mean, it's almost like what you were saying at the beginning made me think of that whole thing of when people run towards something versus like running away from it.
Mm.
Like often with leaving jobs, people are like desperately trying to run away from something. But even in creating this, it's not like you were trying to run away from, like, you know, some people, when we talk about like business on the podcast or where their ambition comes from, it's either like a really deep rooted insecurity or it's like they're trying to get out of an environment that they didn't want to be in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just like,
yeah, it's true. Actually, I suppose there was levels of, I didn't want to go into another job where I wasn't happy. So I was maybe running away from that reality. But I think, yeah, you're right. I think I was probably more running towards the light of like, oh, I'm going to make a great company that everyone's happy to work with and work for and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I think a lot of my motivations throughout life has more so been about being happy. Although to be fair, that's shifted now to contentment. I think contentment is a better thing to strive for.
Wait, tell me more about this.
Yeah. So
let's take a detour.
Well, I think it was this random realization that I had. I'm trying to think, maybe like 3-4 years ago, I think. And I got a tattoo. I get tattoos just to be like, oh, I thought of something. Yay.
Love it.
But I was thinking about my constant thought growing up that I needed to be happy. That was the thing that I was missing. I needed to be happy. And I went through like some depressive periods when I was younger and things like that. And then I realized that actually, no, happiness is fleeting. Like you can't be happy all the time. It's just it's actually not possible. And I think it's weird and kind of dangerous for people to be like, oh yeah, let's all be happy all the time. Because you don't actually want to be happy all the time. You don't want to go to someone's funeral and be like, ah, yay.
Yeah,
what a great time. Like, you don't want to be like, you don't want to be happy all the time. It's, you need to have a range of emotions.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to have a range of emotions and understand your different emotions, because I know people that try to be happy all the time and actually they've got this constant fight whenever they don't feel happy, because naturally you're not going to feel happy all the time.
Right.
Whereas contentment can be consistent. You can be content in sadness, you can be content in happiness, as long as you're content with the feeling that you're having. So I think when I decided that I was going to focus on being content rather than being happy, I became happier because I wasn't striving for happiness.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that
And then
does
I got contentment
sense.
Tattooed on my arm, because, you know, got to remember it.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. I think that's a really, I always think about it with dating, that people often chase like passion.
Yeah.
I think like the equivalent of the happiness in like your career or your life is like the version of passion in love.
Yeah, that and like it's constant like, sparks and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's like that's not the long game. Contentment is actually
this
the
is
long
it.
Game.
And actually a lot of those like butterflies and sparks are just anxiety, because actually the person's not a consistent human being. So yeah,
don't make that mistake. Out of interest, have you gone into like the whole attachment theory stuff?
I've looked into it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I actually had a job where we did that like the love attachment stuff,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Like, we did the quiz for our job, so our boss knew how to like,
I mean, I kind of better. Rate that actually.
It sounds like a good idea, but it actually doesn't translate, because for me anyway, the way I'm with like a partner in comparison to the way I am with my friends, family, colleagues is completely different. I do not like people touching me generally in life, but if I'm with my partner, that's fine. And like, I don't like spending loads of time with people, but it's different if I'm with a partner. Like, I'm very different depending on if it's a partner or if it's just like a friend or family.
Okay.
As I say, colleague. I also don't really want my colleague to be touching me generally, to be honest. I feel like that's a HR issue.
No, I mean, there doesn't need to be any love language touch going on.
Exactly,
in the office,
that's what I'm saying, yeah. I don't know if you want physical touch to be your business love language. I have looked into it. It's been years since I've done it, so I can't actually remember. I think it's, from memory before, it might be different now. I think it was words of affirmation and quality time, I think.
Mm.
But I honestly can't remember. What are yours? Do you know?
Well, honestly, I'm everything. Like, I was literally
saying, everyone is though, surely.
The other day, I was like, I'm everything all the time. Like, there is no break. There's nothing you can let off on. I want all of it every second of the day, which makes me really fun to be married to. It made me think about it because I was thinking about like how a lot of people move from a place of insecurity or a place of security. Mm. And I think there's also like this massive factor of like being a woman of like, in your 30s, we grew up with quite an interesting like age of kind of coming of age of the girl boss, because that's where like all of my, I like the eye roll for anyone who's listening. Not
I hate it. I rolled my eyes. I hate it.
The eye roll is strong because I think that's where like, we grew up with such a like culture of that, even if you didn't have parents who were necessarily like entrepreneurial or you weren't seeing different lifestyles, we were watching things like Dragon's Den and watching,
Apprentice.
The Apprentice, exactly. Watching Dragon's Den, watching The Apprentice, watching like the Nasty Girl founder, Sophia Amoroso,
that
whole scandal, and seeing like women for the first time like rise to the top. Mm. Did you ever feel like there was a pressure that because you're a woman who's capable, you should go and start your own business?
Do you know what? No, because I think throughout my life, I've been kind of underestimated. Like throughout school, I had the issue of, I was very smart. I was like, quote unquote, like book smart, whatever. But I was like the top of every set and I was getting fantastic grades. But I was also very naughty and I was very popular. And I was the only person who was straddling those two worlds.
Yeah.
And teachers did not like me because I was not bothering to do homework, but getting A's. And that's not a good message to give out to people that you don't really have
like,
to
just
bother.
Just be amazing.
Just figure it out, you know. And I think I now know more because I've been diagnosed with ADHD and Asperger's. So I understand more about why I was acting how I was acting in school. But I got in trouble a lot. And so I think because I got in trouble a lot, people then assumed I wasn't smart and then would be surprised when they found like got my grades and they were like, oh, actually, Chloe's really smart and all of that kind of stuff. I was always late to be put in like the gifted and talented programs and things like that, because, again, none of my teachers assumed that I was an intelligent person. Mm. No one ever throughout my school, and this might just be because of the school I went to, but no one at my school ever spoke to me about university or like what my next step would be after school. They actively didn't try to get me to go to their sixth form because I don't think they wanted me there.
They were like, "Should we pay?"
They were like, "Please go somewhere else." So I think throughout my life, no one's really, minus like my family, my friends, but like kind of externally, no one's really been like, "Oh, but you should do this, you should do that," because I think people just don't see me as that person.
Mm.
On the flip side, I think when I then did start Shift, I definitely felt that pressure of being a female founder, also being one of the very few like women of colour within the industry as well. And I think my friends that are also female founders and people of colour within the industry have all had that similar pressure of, we need to be really visible, we always need to look like we're doing our best, we always need to be perfect, all of that kind of stuff, just because we're representing so many different people.
Mm.
And I think that's probably where the pressure comes from more so, where it's like, oh, you're here now you need to do well. That's, do you know what I mean? Whereas I think I just don't see that pressure on like white male founders at all.
No.
To the point where actually there's a lot of agencies where no one really knows who like is the founder of it, because it's some white guy who doesn't need to really bother with doing press and interviews and all of that kind of stuff.
Okay, this is such a truth. I can't remember where I heard this. Do you know what I do remember? I think it was Sharmadine Reed talked about it. And the first time I heard it, I was like, fuck yeah, I've literally never thought about that. How when it comes to female-led founders, and as you said, especially like women of colour, it's like they have to be an influencer as well as the business owner.
That's it.
And you're like, there's ginormous, like pretty much every company like that's IPO'd in the last like year that's by a white man, like you will not know who that person is.
Exactly.
Absolutely no. His name's probably Dave already. So we can take a good guess.
Good old Dave.
Right. There was a stat of something that there was like more men called Dave in CEO positions in the
I've not seen that stat.
FTSE 500 than there was like women of colour at one point. And you're like, that's firstly,
I love random stats like that. It's a terrible stat. But
yeah, it's horrendous. I don't know if the name was Dave. It was something like that. And you're like, of course it's John or something. And you're like, fuck's sake.
I feel like it's probably John. John feels
it could
like
be John.
The name.
Yeah. He made it to the top. But yeah, that kind of, so once you were in it and you've started this business, you started it with other founders, like co-founders?
No, so I started it by myself and then I bought in a co-director. So I bought in my my ex-colleague, Adam. So we'd worked together at the agency previously. So I knew how he worked. I wouldn't have bought in someone who I hadn't worked with, because I know that even though people look good, doesn't mean that they're doing well behind the scenes. So we'd worked together. We worked very well. We had very similar kind of visions and things like that. And then, so I brought him in six months into it.
Okay, so you found this, you're 26, you start this business, you bring in your co-founder.
Yes.
And at this point, you're saying success, even though obviously you have to drive revenue and stuff. Did you take any investment out of interest?
No. But I will say though, I think something that's very important to say, and not a lot of founders of talent management agencies say this, it's not difficult to start a talent management agency. Like you don't need a lot of stuff. You kind of just need a laptop. Okay. Like physically, you need a laptop. Sorry, tangibly, you need a laptop and a phone and an internet connection. That's kind of it. The main thing you need that's actually going to make you successful is like the connections and the understanding and the knowledge. That's more what it is.
Right.
So I think I don't think it's really a business where you need investment or you need some kind of like capital to get it started, other than obviously if you don't have a laptop. So I will say anyone could start a talent management agency tomorrow. My mum could if she wanted to.
Yeah,
she'd be terrible, but she could start one if she wanted to.
She could be a mummager. You never know. She could be the next Kris Jenner. Don't talk about your mum like that. She might be brilliant.
I'm unsure, but you know.
So at this point, what are you chasing? Like, you're not chasing money, you're chasing a good workload, but what gives you that drive to like go after this business?
I think, as I say, I think it was the kind of driving force was, I want to create this thing that nobody else has done. Because with the industry at the time, like, bear in mind, this is lockdown, the Black Lives Matter resurgence has just happened. Everyone's talking about diversity all the time, which is very irritating, to be honest, because no one actually does it. But that was it, where like the agency I'd come from had been banging on about diversity and inclusion. Their whole website was diversity and inclusion everywhere. But when you looked behind the scenes, you've got no people of colour at any like high level at all.
Right.
There was four people of colour working there. And I remember having this conversation with my boss actually, where I said, like, you haven't even realised the privilege that all of us have that are like the people of colour that were working here. Three of us were Caribbean, which is a point of privilege anyway, because our names sound more white on paper. Like Chloe Downs, you would have no idea what colour I am. And generally Caribbean people have like white surnames. So you don't really know what colour they are on paper in comparison to like an African surname, for example, or like an Indian surname. Then there was two of us that were mixed race. All four of us had been to university. So like all of us were coming from some level of privilege. We'd all come from a working class background, but none of us had really struggled that much in life.
Yeah.
So, you know, you think you're ticking the box of, oh yeah, we've got some brown people working here, but actually we're not really diverse in like within us four. So I think that's what I could see, where I was like, you're ticking boxes, you're not actually doing it because you want to do it, you're doing it because it looks good on paper. And that's it. When actually like what you should be doing, like true diversity and inclusion, is removing barriers to entry, so it's a level playing field, and then you just hire the best person, whether that person is a straight white guy or the brown girl or whatever, you're just making it even. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of the marketing industry, there was just so many barriers to entry for kind of specifically working class people. And obviously within working class, you've got more people of colour anyway. So they're asking for a degree for like an entry level job. You don't need a degree. Like no one cares about a degree really. You need like a few years experience to get an entry level job. Again, you're not going to be able to get a few years experience if you don't have people that you know within the industry. You also can't do an unpaid internship unpaid internships are ridiculous, but you can't do an unpaid internship if you're coming from a working class background, where then you're like, you know, a single parent background, whatever, where your mum then has to pay for your bus travel and your lunch and all of those things. If you don't come from that kind of background, you just don't think about those barriers. You're like, oh, but it's all right, you know, they can make their way to work, when you don't realise like what it takes to get to work, especially in London. Like it costs money to get to work, right? So what I wanted to do was like try to remove all of those barriers and just create a more inclusive workforce. Whether people stayed with Shift or not, what I wanted to do is just start bringing people into the industry that maybe wouldn't have had that opportunity before. And I also wanted to sign talent, not because they ticked a box, because that's what so many agencies were doing. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, now we've got a black one and a gay one, we've got this. Like that was basically just...
And like putting them on the roster, but you don't actually ever see them.
You don't do anything with them. Like you're not getting them anything because you don't even understand their culture or their background or what they need. So you've got all these tick boxes, but, and also behind the scenes, you've got a fully white team. So I wanted to sign people, not because they ticked a box, but just because I thought they were really cool and they were really good at what they did. And by doing so, we then had a fully inclusive and diverse roster, because we were just signing people because they were cool, rather than trying to fit people into the different boxes we need them to fit in. So that was kind of a lot of my driving force, I suppose, of I'm not seeing this. And in my head, this is very obviously what it should look like.
Yeah.
So I'll just make it. And then hopefully people will follow. After.
Yeah, hearing this, you're like, what a novel idea. Like, actually do...
I'm not that smart. Like, it's quite simple. It's quite a simple premise, to be honest. Like, but it is. I think there's so many things, in my opinion, that are just common sense in business that people don't do. Same with, like, money. Like, if you focus on making money and that's all you care about and you're not treating your workforce well, you're not actually going to make money because staff turnover and having to hire people is super expensive. Having to retrain people is time consuming. It's inefficient. Why don't you just be nice to people?
Yeah.
And then they'll stay and they'll do a good job because they actually enjoy coming to work. They'll probably take less. My team took like so few sick days. They could take whatever sick days they wanted. They actually had unlimited holidays. So they could also take unlimited holiday.
Oh, that's boss move.
They didn't really take that much holiday because they genuinely enjoy, like, to the point where sometimes I was like, guys, maybe you should like go somewhere.
Like, can you leave?
Yeah, please, like, stop hanging around here. But like, they didn't do all those things because they enjoyed work so much. So generally it actually made us more successful and profitable because people actually enjoyed being there. We had 100% staff retention. No one ever left the company. And the people that were in my company are still there. They haven't left. Yeah, like that's the key, right? Like, if you're going to build a business, you should build a business that's able to function without you. And people are happy and they want to stay, and that's what I created, basically. So that was my focus.
Yeah. And I mean, people listening to this and even myself, I'm like, well, that sounds like the dream, because it's also, you know, it's doing well. You're getting like a lot of accolades at this point, Forbes 30 under 30, yeah. Which, by the way, I always really wanted to be in, but
I missed the boat.
Maybe like 40.
I feel like there's another list. There's like an older list.
No, there is. There's like a 40 under 40. I think they do it for every decade.
Get it.
And I'm like, that's embarrassing though. I did go through a point where I was like, I could just put it on my LinkedIn. No one would even realize.
Nobody would ever check.
No one would ever check.
There's no way people would.
Actually, I'm going to do that.
Do you know what I did see though? I did see a few people doing like posts. I remember when I got on the list, people were doing posts saying, oh, I was nearly on the list. And they did a whole post about nearly being on the list.
Right.
Which I'm not sure how they knew, because you don't actually find out you're on the list until literally the list comes out. Like, you open up the webpage.
Really?
And you just check to see if you're there or not. So I just scrolled down and was like, oh, yay.
But so you like, the business is going well. It feels like ethically good.
Yeah.
You're getting like a lot of accolades, which presumably, like, you know, feels good as your identity, right?
Yeah.
Always feels good. And then financially, it's also like doing well. This is not like a small, you know, business.
Yeah.
It's a multi-million pound business that you've created. Like, how, like, why do you walk away? In my head, I'm like, this sounds great. Like, what?
It's because it just wasn't something I was passionate about. As I said, like, even how I got into it.
Right.
It's not like I was like, oh yeah, I love influencers and all of that. I didn't love that. Like, I didn't love that part of it. Whenever I was hearing other founders talking about their journey, it would always be, oh, I loved watching YouTube. These people are my favorite people. Now I get to manage my favorite people. I wasn't following any of these people before, and I didn't really care about that world. So I think it was that. It was just like, I didn't have that passion for influencers and marketing generally. Marketing is a very strange place to be.
I think anyone who's passionate, I mean, I work in advertising. Come on. Anyone who's passionate about it, I'm like, guys,
yeah, let's not be passionate about,
let's touch some grass, like, and come
know,
back to
do
this.
You know what I mean? Let's push the consumerism more. But so yeah, I think it was that. It was also it's how serious, how, like, people in marketing and advertising take things so seriously when we're not, like, no one's gonna die. No, yeah. if an ad doesn't go out that day, everyone's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But it's just like the amount of pressure that's put on. It's weird because I'm sure from like an external point of view, if you've never worked in marketing, it just doesn't make sense why it's so high pressure. But it is. It's just such a stressful environment to be in constantly. And things move so quickly all the time. You always need to be on top of everything and know everything that's going on. I also think, going back to that kind of visibility point of view, I had become so visible to the point where I was getting recognized, like, when I was out.
Wow.
Especially when I was going to events where like, influencers might be. I went to a festival last summer with my friend, and we'd, to be fair, I'd gone as her guest, but she'd got some VIP thing from a brand or something. So we were in the VIP, and I had a guy come over to me that I, in my opinion, I'd never seen in my life. I don't remember this guy at all. But he came over to me and was like, oh, Chloe. Like, Chloe Downs. I think he said my whole name, which is stressful anyway. I said, oh, hi, you all right? And he was, oh, yeah, yeah, do you remember me? I couldn't remember him. I said, oh, no, sorry. Like, and he said he'd met me 3-4 years ago or something. And he was like, oh, are you still roller skating? I have not roller skated for 4 years. Right. I used to do post videos of roller skating, but the fact that this guy knew so much about me made me feel very on edge when I could not remember this guy. I couldn't remember his name, anything. And I think, you know, it's nice that there was nothing malicious about it, but things like that kept on happening where I was in scenarios where it was not a work scenario at all. I was out of my friends and people knew who I was. And I've never wanted to be famous. That was like not my dream at all. And I don't really like people knowing me. I also get quite uncomfortable with those kinds of like interactions anyway. And it's quite difficult when you're the face of your company. And anything you do can impact so many. It's not just impacting me. If it was impacting me, I'll do what I want. It's impacting so many people. If I'm like really rude to someone, do you know what I mean? I react in a way that I maybe want to react to someone who's in my business. It's going to impact potentially my team, my talent, all of that kind of stuff. And it was just such a big weight on my shoulders of I have to constantly look perfect all the time and be perfect and act in a perfect way. Because it's going to impact people.
Yeah.
And I just didn't like that pressure. So I think it was, as I say, it wasn't something that I felt I was passionate about. I didn't feel like it was my purpose. And the visibility stuff definitely had like been weighing on me more and more throughout the years.
Out of interest, like with what you're saying, because it sounds like that kind of like the model minority thing as well, where it's like you have to be 10 times better. And that if you did do anything, the repercussions, like as a woman of colour, like people are going to come at it with a completely different angle.
100%.
But you can get away with a lot more if you're a white male founder.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also I saw this when I was at university, because I grew up in South London, which is an incredibly diverse place. Mm. Everyone's everything. We're also a very blunt people. Like South London people generally, we're very blunt and direct. When I went to university and I was basically one of the very few brown people there generally, all of a sudden, the way I was speaking in South London that no one cared about, all of a sudden I was very aggressive and people always thought I wanted to fight them.
Oh, really?
And all these things, like people thought I was really aggressive and angry, and I became this like angry, like quote unquote angry black girl. And it just made me so wary of the fact I have to be careful of everything I say.
Right.
And then I went into the corporate world and the same thing, people constantly had little things about my attitude, which again, I didn't have an attitude, I was just telling people something directly, which generally is a more efficient way of talking. but like my attitude or just little small things that kept on, like little microaggressions that kept on happening. And it does definitely start to kind of grate you down a bit of just being very conscious of how you look and how you're coming across to people. I'm also aware that I've got, like, to be fair, I've tried to get it back because I lost it a bit when I was in the corporate world. But I've got quite a working class accent. Like I sound like a working class person anyway. So again, there's certain connotations that come with just how I talk. I still use slang because that's just how I talk. That's how everyone talks in my area. So it's definitely like, there's definitely pressure just from the fact that I represent so many different groups and people. And it can, if you've never met a mixed race person before, if you've never met a person from South London before, and I'm the first person you're meeting, I don't want you to get a negative view of all the people that I represent. Which you shouldn't have, right?
Like, that's so fucked, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't.
It's something everyone. I would never, ever, like, I would never think about that for myself. Yeah. I'd never presume that someone's going to meet me and think that, like, this is how all white women are.
Yeah.
Like, just a different way to move through business in the world, isn't it? But so you had these things sort of creeping on top of you, and you're starting to notice, like, I don't really like being recognised in that way. I'm not really feeling the passionate. What was like the?
Yeah, I think the recognition thing was recognition. Is that a word?
Recognition. That sounds,
recognition. That sounded so weird coming out. I don't think whatever I just said was a word. That stuff was like, what, every time it happened, I was very aware of it. And then I started just being aware all the time in situations, because I was like, people, especially in like spaces where I knew there might be influencers or marketing people, I was always very aware of what I was doing, which felt, it meant that I never really enjoyed myself. And sometimes I actively avoided going places because I thought I'm not really up for that, those kind of conversations today. I'd rather just, have normal chats.
Yeah.
And then, I think with the rest of it, it's crazy because it started maybe after like year one, that we were having like an issue with one of our talent. And I just started thinking to myself, like, I don't want to do this. This is making me really unhappy. I was very unhappy at the time. I was having panic attacks all the time. And I was like, I don't want to do this. And I remember thinking to myself, how do I get out of this? And I could not think of a way where I could leave this and it was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I think actually now I look back on it, it was less about the the actual tangible leaving, it was, oh, what is everyone going to think if I like just quit now and I exit this, and what am I going to do about it? And what am I going to do after?
Yeah.
So that happened, and then we dropped that talent, and then things kind of got better. So I thought, okay, cool, maybe it was just that person, that's it. And then it happened again with another creator. And then again, I was like, oh, I don't want to do this. It's like, it's too hard again. Like, how do I leave? And then we dropped that guy. And then again, it was okay. And then I had that feeling again, but nothing bad was happening. Like, there was no issues. Everything was going fine. And then I reflected on it and I was like, oh, actually, no, this is actually what I'm feeling. It's not connected to a specific individual or scenario.
Mm.
I don't feel passionate enough about this to want to do it every day. And then I had one scenario where, what was it? It was like September last year, where we had one of our team was off for a month because she had some like family issues. And then we had, then the two other people in my team, because we were a team of four, the two other people in my team both had holidays at the time. So there was, in a whole month, I'd basically done, like at one point I'd been doing 2 to 3 people's work at any one time. And obviously my work is already multiple people's work anyway.
Yeah.
So, and I looked horrendous because I was just so tired. I was so worn out. I remember looking myself in the mirror and just being like, oh my gosh, I look terrible. And I was just so miserable and like depleted. And I just thought, I can't keep on, like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. Like, this isn't how I want to feel for the rest of my life. And especially because I just don't feel passionate enough about this, where I'm okay with like these sections of the business. So that was the tipping point. And then literally that's when I actually made the decision. Was like, okay, cool, I'm going to leave now. And then, yeah, so it was like a year ago, this, like, now, basically.
Were your family like, you're nuts? Like,
no.
What are you doing?
No. I told my parents first. So I made the decision. I'm the kind of person that I don't really ask people about decisions I'm going to make because I have enough faith in myself that I can make my own decisions.
Mm.
But I think my parents were the only people where I was kind of telling them with some level of asking as well.
Right.
And just like just checking. Mainly because I was like, if I have no money, then you might have to take me back in, guys. So I remember I went to my parents and I told, and I was like, I'm not really a crier, but I was really upset about it. And I said it to them, and the first thing my mum said was like, yeah, good idea. Like, basically, you need to take a break. And both my parents were really supportive of it. And I think that whole period of me telling people, because I only really told my close friends and family. A lot of my family didn't know until I left because I'm just not close enough with them that I felt like it was a piece of information they needed to know.
Mm.
And I was very conscious that, like, I only really told people that in my head know me, like, they understand me as a person. And it was really nice because, and it actually, like, that whole period actually made me really happy because every single person I told that's my friend or family was so supportive of it. Not a single person questioned me. Everyone was like, well done, we're proud of you, like, excited, you're going to do well at whatever you do, whatever. And if it was questions, it was more just about logistics because people just don't understand how you leave a company that you own. And then even then, the questions were way later on. It wasn't a first response thing. So it was really nice because I think when I hear other people talking about leaving something or changing their mind on something or whatever, it always seems like it's a sad story where just no one supported them or no one wanted to back them or they were questioning their decision. Whereas I just actually didn't have that at all. But maybe that's just because I've got good people around me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it didn't feel like when you've like had the time to settle and you've left and then you're like, you know, a couple of months later, it never felt like failure to you. You're like, this is a good step. This feels like the same thing. I mean, like when I said, when I left the startup, I had such a identity crisis of like, oh, what could I have done to have like made things work or like, you know, that whole, and now I'm not this person anymore. Like I'm not the person from the startup where I'd started to like build my name and stuff.
Yeah.
Where, like, how did that fuck with your identity?
Yeah, it was definitely, it was never like a, how could I have made that work? Or like, oh, I wish I'd tried hard or anything like that. Because I knew I made the right decision. And I'm generally someone who I'm confident in my decisions. Just based off track record, I've done all right so far with my decisions. So it wasn't that, but it was definitely, because it's the first time ever in my life that I haven't had a plan, like another plan to go to. I'm not like, I haven't moved to another job or I'm doing something else. I left with absolutely no plan of what I was doing at all. So that was very hard for me because I just didn't really know. I don't really know what you're meant to do when you don't have a job. Like, I don't know what people do, especially since like Jeremy Kyle got cancelled. So, so I think that was more the difficulty of like, okay, cool. So like, what do I do now? Because I always feel like I've got this feeling like I always have to do something. And actually that was something I had to unlearn, where it was like, you don't have to constantly be doing something all the time.
Yeah.
And actually it's okay to not do anything. I also think living in London specifically, we care so much about titles and jobs. Like the first or second question people ask you is like, oh, hey, what's your name? What do you do? No one cares about anything else. It's what's your name? What do you do? And I was on a podcast recently and the host made a good point where it's like people are kind of weighing up how to talk to you, like how valuable you are to them, or like what kind of response they should give you and things like that, which just is very strange. And not having a job title when I've had a job title for ages and had like a good job title for a while is very weird, because I don't know what I meant to say when people ask me what I do.
Yeah.
And that was very confusing for me for the first month or so. So I was like, I don't know. I'm not sure. And also, again, like, I think I'd realised that probably the reason I kind of held on to Shift for so long was because I've really got this like real link with my personal like sense of self and like what I'm doing and how quote unquote successful I am and what people think of me. I've never cared if people like me. That's not a thing that I've ever really cared about, but I've always cared about how well people think I'm doing and like people's perception of me. I think it probably comes from school, where everyone thought, like, my teachers thought I was stupid. So I've got this thing where I always feel like I have to prove to people that I'm smart and prove to people that I'm good and prove to people all these things. And so when I came away from Shift, knowing that I wanted to come away from that, I had to catch myself, because every time someone would ask me, oh, what do you do? I'd be like, oh, I just exited my company, yeah. Which makes me sound successful anyway. Saying you exited a company just kind of means nothing, but it makes you sound successful. So I had to catch myself doing that, because I'm as much as I don't have the founder title anymore, I'm still holding on to that.
You're like leveraging the validation of your identity.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I was still doing it. So I just switched to saying I don't do anything. That was my I'm like, don't do anything.
Just. Which unfortunately is a woman, everyone just goes like, oh, okay, so she basically has really rich parents or a rich husband.
That's it. Which I think like, that I don't have either of those things.
Yeah, you're like,
but cool, care. Go for it. Matter. But that's the thing, I think I have, and I'm definitely not there yet where I completely don't care about anything that people think of me, but I think I've been trying my best to be comfortable in the fact that maybe people get me wrong. Because that was something that I don't like when people get me wrong. I don't mind if you don't like me, as long as you don't like
me. Yeah,
because of something that I've actually truly done. But I don't like people getting me wrong. And I think that's exactly that. Like, me saying nothing, I'm sure you've got a bunch of things in your head about why it is that I'm sitting in Soho House and I'm doing nothing. Because people always ask me in Soho House, it's not a good place to say you're doing nothing, because there must be something going on. But yeah, I'm trying my best to get into a space where I don't care about that.
That's like such a, I've done so much arguing with men on the internet recently.
Oh, I do and love like,
that. Oh, so bad for it. But then I'll literally wake up in the middle of the night, like anxious, and I'll be like, I want to check my phone. Like, has that guy woken up in Alabama? Because I've got something to say to him. And it's so bad. But literally what you were just saying of like, if someone makes judgment on you based on not knowing you at all, like I've recently tried to do that in the comments. Like, I can't remember even what someone said. I was like, making some point about like some exploitation of women and something in the chat, and and a guy had gone back and been like, oh, congratulations on your ATM husband, and I was like well, that's unusual. But I was so ready to like jump in the comments and be like, actually, you know nothing about my finances and I have this and I'm a freelance, and then I was like, why am I even thinking about like validating myself to this person,
especially someone who you realistically don't give a shit about. No. I'm sure there's nothing in his life that you're jealous of.
Literally nothing.
He's spending his day commenting on people's videos.
Yeah, I'm like, this Instagram, it smells of your parents, basically. Like, it's giving that, like, you haven't left the house in a while.
Yeah.
Your trousers are crusty. Like, that's the thing. And just reframing things of, like, I love that, what you just said, of, like, I'm okay if you don't like me based on something I've done.
Yeah.
Because also, you seem like with someone who really, like, you move with morals and intention. Like, I imagine that you're not going out and sort of acting like loosey-goosey with the way you move through the world.
No, I try my best to be a good person. That's always my thing. I used to have this whole monologue that I would say to my team about I do not care about being nice. Like, I don't strive to be nice. I think in my head, what nice is, nice feels fake to me. It feels like you're doing something mm-hmm. to get something back. Whereas I feel like being good is just something that you're doing because you feel like it's the right thing and that kind of thing. So I always strive to be good. That might not always be nice, but I try my best to be good and, you know, do things that are the best for other people or the best for me or whatever. So yeah, as long as I'm doing that, then if you don't like what I'm doing, okay.
And also, even like the word nice is such a like a word that we put onto women and not to men.
Yeah.
Like when we think about, I remember in one of my first agencies, we had a female CEO and it would always be like, oh, she's a great CEO, but like, you know, she's a bit of a bitch. Yeah. And it was always like this, they always had to validate it with like something about that person's personality. And I was like, I don't care. It's like, I don't think I didn't think she was a bitch at all. I think she's very direct and very, like, she knows where she's going. She knows what she's doing. She'll pull you up on stuff.
Yeah, which a man would do completely. No one cares.
Assertive.
Yeah, that's it. Bitch. Bossy,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is it. Like, those loaded words annoy me. And there's loaded words with women, then there's additional loaded words with being a person of colour. Mm. And then if you're a woman and a person of colour, it's like loaded words everywhere. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think, you know, as I say, I think people should just be good people and just try their best to be good to other people. That's it. Like, who cares about? Because I also think nice is like, if my friend came over to me and said, oh, Chloe, do you like my outfit? And that outfit is shit.
Mm.
Me being nice is saying, oh, yeah, your outfit is great. Well, no, like, the right thing to do is say, maybe you should get changed.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, here's another outfit. Like, the good thing is, oh, not too keen on that one. Here's another one. Maybe you should wear that. Or maybe you should change your shoes or whatever. I think that's like, that's more what I'm about than like pleasing people all the time. I think that's the key. Like, I'm not striving to please people. I'd rather help people in the way that they need to be helped rather than maybe the way they want to be helped.
Yeah, literally, amen to that. One thing I want to sort of come to towards the end of this is that, so now you're in this place where you're working out what's next. But what really interests me is early on you said that you have Asperger's and ADHD, which firstly is like a combination that I've like only just started. Obviously, I know both those things, my background psychology, so I know both of them pretty well. But I'd never really heard them talked about
the
together.
Combination is horrendous.
Yeah, because Professor Green just came on a podcast and he was talking about it. He is, I don't know if he was Asperger's, but he said he's like autism and ADHD. Yeah.
Was it on Jamie Lang's podcast?
Yeah,
I think
actually,
I saw a clip.
It's a great episode, actually. Yeah. Obviously, don't watch them, watch me. But, and...
I nearly ran him over the other day, actually. That's my...
Who, Jamie Lang?
No, Professor Green, yeah. He was in my area. He was cycling around the corner with his kid right in the middle of the road and I had to stop. He was like, oh, thanks. You're in the middle of the road, man. Yeah, he lives in my area.
Good PR. That wouldn't have been good PR.
No, definitely not.
But like, how do you... like, generally, people who have ADHD are brimming with ideas and, like, can find it really hard to decide, like, what thing is next because they're real, like, doers. But then someone with Asperger's, from my understanding, it's, like, very considered and process-driven. Yeah. And, like, what do you do next? Like, how do you decide what you're doing next with that on top of your thought process?
Yeah, it's really tricky because they're opposing things like that. So many of the traits fight with each other.
Yeah.
Like, I know people that have just got ADHD. I know people that are just autistic or have Asperger's. And yeah, it's like different ends of the spectrum that I'm then kind of straddling both. And sometimes I'm a bit more of this and a bit more of that, which is very strange. But I think the thing is, look, I don't know. It might just be me. I don't know if it's specifically because of my neurodiversity, but I've always got a lot of ideas. I forget things all the time. It's funny because people think I'm like the most organized person ever. I think most people, if they were asked to describe me, would say that I was very organized. I realized that the reason that I'm so organized is because if I wasn't organized, I would forget everything.
Right.
Like, I would 100% not do anything, I would forget everything. So from quite young, before I even got my diagnosis, what I was doing was putting as many systems in place so I did not have to think about anything and I could just like be efficient by following whatever like structure I had. So every single thing is in my calendar. I put in my travel time in my calendar. I put in my get ready time in the calendar because I will forget when I'm meant to be getting ready and I'll leave at the wrong time and all of that kind of stuff. So I think I've put a lot of things in place kind of unknowingly before I got my, because I only got my diagnosis like 3 years ago, I think.
For both parts?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Double whammy.
I know, which is, looking back, I don't know how people didn't realise, but, you know. But yeah, so I think my probably my ADHD, but also just, I don't know if it's just me, I have loads of ideas all the time. And I think what I've learned about myself is that I actually need to give myself a second to figure out if I actually want to do it or not.
Right.
The amount of domains I own is crazy, because every time I have a new idea, I'm like, I need to buy the domain right now, and I need to build the website right now, I need to get all the Instagram handles right now. To the point where my mom actually told me the other day, I called her being like, oh, do you think this is a good name for this Instagram handle? And she was like, Chloe, it was for like yoga stuff.
Right.
So Chloe, you don't even have the yoga qualification yet. Why are you making a website? Like, take a second. And actually, I've come away from the yoga qualification. I'm like, I probably don't actually want to be a yoga instructor. It's just a good skill to have. And maybe I'll do a class here and there and that's it. But I always do that where I'll just try to do everything all at once. So with this new business, I specifically was like, I'm going to trial it for a month before I do it. Before I even decide that I'm going to do it, I'm going to trial it for a month to make sure I actually enjoy doing this. Because if not, what will happen is I'll jump into another career, another business, another job that I'm not passionate about, and then just get into exactly the same position as I was last time at Shift, where I jumped into this thing and kind of just kept on rolling with it until it caught up to me and I realized, actually, this isn't actually what I want to do.
Yeah.
So I do think getting my diagnosis has helped me a lot, because I actually understand myself better now, and I'm aware of why I do things and what I do and how I should kind of cope with different things. And I think in the past few years, I've definitely been more... I've always been a considered person, but I think I've been more considered and generally happier because I actually understand what I'm doing now, if that makes sense. But yeah, it's a very strange thing to straddle.
Yeah, it makes loads of sense. I mean, it also almost sounds like, I actually don't like it when people say superpower around neurodivergence.
I hate it, but yes.
Yeah, it's really annoying, especially because like I'm dyslexic and I'm like, no one's saying that about dyslexia. Like, literally not a single person has ever said dyslexia is a superpower. Like, ADHD is a superpower.
Yeah,
autism is a superpower.
Oh, I honestly hate it so much. You're right, actually. Yeah, no one says dyslexia is a...
I'm waiting for my moment. They're like, you just can't spell very well. And I'm like, sorry.
No, but it's really interesting though, because like since I got diagnosed, we've realized that literally my whole family on my dad's side is like all of us are neurodiverse,
right?
But again, it's just one of those things that no one really noticed, because just how we all communicate in such a similar way.
Yeah,
no one really cared. Like, we don't, no one's different because we all can communicate in a similar way. But yeah, there's a lot of dyslexia in my family. There's people that have just got ADHD. There's all these different things that are going on. So yeah, I've been looking into a lot of things more. But yeah, it's really sad that dyslexia has this thing where it's just, oh, you can't spell.
Yeah,
but it's not that. It's obviously there's some levels of that, but like not really. And also, it's not really that you can't spell. Like, there's
so
many
low key
think
you're like a little bit dumb. Like, I think that's where growing up it was like, especially like because I had to, you know, I had like a tutor and I had extra time on things.
Yeah,
like sometimes I'd have specials like sessions in like the part of the school where like the special kids, as they used to call them back in the day, would be. And I think
our one was called the A Star Center. That was what ours was called. I wasn't there because I wasn't diagnosed yet.
Yeah.
That's what it's called. It was or A Plus Centre or something.
God, I don't even
It was very strange.
What.
Like, they tried to give it a really fancy name where I'm like, we know what's going on.
Yeah. No, these people aren't allowed in PE. That was the same with me, so I understand. But and it's kind of like a it's a weird thing to navigate, I think, with your own identity and with working out how it shapes your decision making and everything.
Yeah.
So now that you've done all of that, like as we say, the work, like, you've gone through, okay, I know that this business, like, the thing that was missing, that was this and this. How's your like identity at the end of this, to wrap this story off? Like, how do you feel like your identity's shifted?
I don't know. I think, actually, no, do you know what, when I was leaving, I obviously told all my talent, and bear in mind, some of these people had been with us from the start, so like they've got to know me, and we very hands-on with our talent management, so they really do know us, and you know, people were at my birthday and things like that. I sent out an email to everyone and I said, look, if you want to call me off like and have a conversation, then call me. So I had calls and chats with a lot of my talent, and one of the creators that we'd been managing for quite a long time, and I consider him more of a friend, like we hang out now that I'm not managing him as well, he said something that was so like perfect, which is, he's also a poet and an author now, so it makes sense. But he when we were having our call, he said, oh, I'm really excited to get to know you as just Chloe. And I thought, oh, that's exactly what it is. Like, it's, I don't want to be Chloe from Shift anymore. I don't want to be Chloe the founder. I don't want to be Chloe the whatever the title is. I just want to be Chloe. And I think that's where the focus has been, with like understanding who I am just by myself. Because I don't think a lot of us know that. I think a lot of us are so tied to different things, whether it's a relationship or a job or identity, whatever it is. And I don't think enough of us know who we are without all of those things, because we never get the opportunity to be away from those things. And I know that I'm definitely in a privileged position that I can be away from those things. So that's where, I don't know what that is yet, but that's what I'm kind of trying to get to, just like who just Chloe is with no additional add-on at the end or at the start.
God, I love that. That's such a, yeah, that's like if the pod could move people anywhere towards that as an ambition. It's like stripping away all the versions of who you're supposed to be that are given to you because of all the different parts of yourself. So yeah, that's a dream. Okay, I'm going to finish with one question and then yes or mess. But the final question, if there's one myth, misconception or societal expectation tied to this period of life you want to challenge, what is it?
Mm, the period being 30s.
Yeah.
I think it's just that you should be established and have things figured out. Like, you should be like in the place you need to be now, like whatever the place is, this is where you're at now, and like you should be in it, and this is you for the rest of your life. It's, I feel like people aren't allowed to start again at 30 or like discover something new at 30 or whatever. I think that's the biggest misconception, that like you're too old to try something new or to start again or figure yourself out. Like, you should have had that all figured out by now. You should know exactly what's going on.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, throw that in the bin. There is this quote, and I really should find it because I think about it all the time. I can't remember who said it. My friend, every time I don't know a quote, I say it's Aristotle. So I'm going to
do that. Like, it makes you sound very clever. Said.
But it's basically like the most, it was a man, he said something like, the most interesting people I know don't know who they want to be later in life. It's like, imagine if you're 25 and you know exactly who you are and exactly who you want to be.
Yeah.
It's like, where's the evolution, where's the change, where's the growth? Like, even that as an ambition from society of like, oh, you should be figured out. It's like, well, what the fuck are we doing for the next 40 years if we're figured out at 30?
And you're never going to try anything new. You're never going to like discover anything about yourself because you're so aware of the fact, or like so sure of the fact that you are who you're meant to be right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that quote. You have to tell me who it actually is.
I'll find it and I'll actually do it properly. Maybe I'll just dub over myself in this episode. Yeah. It'll be like,
Arizona.
Interlude. Okay, this last section is yes or mess. So it's rapid fire questions. And you have to answer with like yes if you're like, yes, good idea, I'm into it. Mess if you're like, that just isn't working for anyone. So being your own boss to gain freedom.
Mess. That's not true at all.
The statement, the girl boss era was empowering.
Mess. By the way, I rolled again for anyone listening.
Leaving all responsibilities for a month of reflection.
Yes.
Nice.
If you have the privilege to, I know it's not as easy as a yes or no, but yes.
Yeah. your colleagues being family, as in not actual family, but we're a family.
Mess. That's one thing I avoided so much. Sorry, it's meant to be quick fire. Anyway,
no,
mess.
Good. And the last one, the idea of more money, more problems.
Who was that, Biggie?
Yeah.
More money, more problems. Yeah, definitely, actually. Yes and no. That's a hard one. It's yes and a mess. You definitely... It should be quick fire, shouldn't it?
You can... The last one.
Your mess.
Your mess. Okay.
That's... Whatever the middle of yes and mess is, your mess.
Maybe like just always problems, but
I feel like you get more money. You get more problems with more money to some degree, and more. Actually, no, I take it back. It's not money. It's the success and stuff. That's what it is. It's the success and the power and all of that kind of stuff. More power, more problems. I think that's what it is.
Ooh.
Yeah. Sorry, Biggie.
T-shirt. There's a lot of people in this world who need to hear more power, more problems.
Yeah.
And get off Twitter.
Right.
Some of them.
Yeah. And AI and any AI generating platform.
Yeah. Agreed.
Immediately.
I could do honestly a whole other podcast on that now. But thank you so much for being here. I've loved it.
Thank you. No, thank you for having me.
It's been a dream.
Yes.
Exactly. Cool.